direct from the Los Angeles Underground. Open your ear holes for The Superiority Complex, a Guano production.
I always say welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
But, first of all, welcome back, Lauren Nichols, everybody. But I always say welcome back, but we should say thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us into your ear holes, as you would say.
People choose to tune in,
right.
You know, whoever does. I just got somebody here. We're back at Undercity, by the way, and we're going to get back to why, because I thought we were done with this place. Just kidding. Like, we have this contentious relationship. There I go with the ums and the likes. I've got to stop that. So Renee told me that someone who comes in says, oh, I listen to that show now because of Sue's episode.
Oh, awesome.
So slowly, the influence.
Yeah, you're growing your empire.
That's eight listeners. Eight that I know of. No, I do get comments every once in a while. People won't comment on my Facebook page or the iTunes like they're supposed to.
I wish you could hyperlink your voice right there.
Yeah, right. Just right. But they do, they'll come and say, I listen to this or I listen to that. Or in your case, you had to have been listening to Sue's episode.
Yeah.
Episode, what was it, 8? No, 9.
Mm-hmm.
Queen of the Undercity or Mayor of the Undercity. And I just got a text that said, I need punk rock Jesus. So I know you're listening.
Heck yeah.
And that's part of the reason, that was the impetus for doing the show today, because you said, I said, can you do another episode? And you said, yeah, but let's make it you're like, I want to hit up the comic book store.
Yeah, I'm dying to get a new title.
A new title. Right? Look at you. So when you were here last, we did our Doctor Who episode. Let me paint the picture.
Sure.
We did our Doctor Who panel, which was very popular. The kids loved it. And Sue recommended to you, and I think I told her that she had recommended to me, a horror title called Lock and Key. It's written by Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son.
I know. I saw that. That's so cool.
And so you gave it a shot. You were not a comic book person.
At all.
And so give us you finished volume one.
Mm-hmm.
And you are now back for volume two.
That's right. And more. It was so good. And I didn't know what to expect because, I'm not a comic book person at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a quick read.
Yeah.
Obvious. I guess I should have assumed that because it's so many pictures. But what's neat, though, too, is it's not, you spend so much time in each kind of scene in the comic because it really does, it's almost like you're watching a movie, like a storyboard. And it really is compelling in that way. Like, you're really, really sucked into the story. And it made it kind of creepier.
Yeah.
I was kind of concerned about that because it was like a horror style comic.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, well, it's not going to be as scary as when I read like Carrie or another kind of horror novel because I can visualize it more. And I think like my imagination is really powerful. So it's kind of becomes more creepy to me. And I thought, okay, if I have an artist renditioning of what's scary, it might not speak to my kind of what's scary, but it was fabulous.
He's Chilean. And I feel like I'm doing him a disservice by not knowing his name. So I'm going to reach back. And where is it? Gabriel Rodriguez.
Yeah. And
can you repeat that for them, Lauren?
Gabriel Rodriguez.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did you give it to Rodriguez?
I was going to try, but no.
It's okay.
But then what else? Oh, yeah, it was more violent than I was expecting, which I thought I would just like that. I wouldn't be able to get through that.
Yeah.
But it was really creepy.
You know, it's the violence, I think, in that it's not gratuitous.
Uh-huh.
It serves the story, I think.
Uh-huh.
Especially in the initial, I don't want to give anything away, but the initial setup for the story is extremely violent.
Yeah.
In a very realistic way.
Very, very real.
And, but I think that sort of, it sets the tone. It kind of sets the tone for, and you kind of need that because, but there are moments, though, where you really, the characters are so well developed that they're, you know, it's a brother-sister-brother relationship. And a lot of the humor in that, you think a book like that is not going to have any humor, but it's funny.
Oh, it's funny. The characters are spot on. Like, the way the teenage boy literally reflecting on himself, like who he thinks he is and what he's planning his summer to be.
That's right.
Yeah, it's really humorous. And it has a lot of heart, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, when sad things happen, they feel very sad. It doesn't feel like trite or comic, what I would imagine comic book would have been like.
We were just talking about this with, Martin, and we were discussing how it used to be that, writers, literature was like that was the purview of, like, you know, your best writers.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
And then you kind of slowly had, you know, like in the 30s and 40s, you had guys who were actual writers, mm-hmm. but were doing screenplays. And so those were, you know, they were kind of dabbling.
Right.
And then that kind of gave some legitimacy to the screen, you know, screenwriting as an art form.
Right, right.
And then, you know, you had playwrights, obviously. And
sure.
But now I think in the 21st century, you've got great writers that are mm-hmm. distilled over. So now you have great writers that are. That's why TV is so good right now. I think there's just as much bad TV,
yes.
but good TV has gotten so much better.
Oh yeah.
To the level where it's almost cinema. Like if you're watching.
Well,
something
that's what people
like,
feel like it's like a movie.
Yeah,
you know.
If you're watching something like Game of Thrones or something, it's right. really well written.
Right. Production quality
is good. But it's that writing that really brings you, that draws you
yeah.
to those characters and gets you going. And that's the thing about Who, like we talked about Doctor
right.
Who panel. His character is so well written, even if the stories are a little cheesy sometimes.
Yeah.
He's such a well-defined character, and his relationship with his companions are so interesting that you
yeah.
want to go back and visit that place again next, wherever
right, right,
they're
right.
visiting,
yeah.
you want to be with those characters again. And I think now you're seeing it in comic books, like especially a guy like, you know, Joe Hill. And even I read an interview with him where he talked about trying to get out of the shadow of his dad.
Oh gosh!
And
he
had
right.
to go by the name Joe Hill. And right. this is one of the things where if you don't think he can do things on his own, and you're only in volume one,
you're
as
good.
You go farther along. But just the initial setup for the story
mm-hmm.
is so cool. The whole idea of, you know, what the little boy Bodhi, what he discovers in this house. It's like,
right.
and you want to keep reading and find out. You're like, what does
yeah.
this mean? Like how. And it draws you in, you know?
Well, that's what I really liked about it, too, is when I first started reading it, and, like, as Bodhi starts to kind of emerge as the person who's the conduit for the supernatural,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, like, I was like, okay, is this going to be through the eyes of an 8-year-old boy? Like, is this really going to relate to Lauren, 26-year-old girl, you know, who's not a comic book fan? But what's nice is all the characters are so strong that, like, yeah, the high school girl, the mom, like, who's, you know, she's struggling with some emotional things. They're all so compelling that it's not like it's just through the boy's voice. Everyone has such a strong voice that you
yeah.
can really relate to each of the characters well.
You touched on something that, because Sue, again, Sue, like, is our... She's our source for all things that are good. As a matter of fact, I have a copy of Aquaman that she has convinced me. She's trying to convince me that Aquaman is good, and I keep telling her there's no way possible. So she is lending me out of her personal collection a copy of Aquaman. I have it right here. It looks intense. He looks like an angry guy. I'd be angry too wearing that suit. But you touched on something because Sue recommended for my wife to read Fables, and Fables is basically. I guess if you know if you watch the show Once Upon a Time, it's I guess they've drawn a lot from Fables. The basic story is the characters that inhabit the fables that we know, you know, Snow White, mm-hmm. are lived in a real place, and that real is another world, and they're in exile because this evil force took over and drove them out, and now they have to live like kind of together, kind of thrown together in mm-hmm. modern day New York. And go ahead.
Do people recognize that they're this fable character, or are they kind of like hiding on the?
They're
fringes?
Kind of. It's kind of like a Harry Potter thing where they have a name for the normal people like you and I. They call them Mundies, the mundanes, the mundane people. And it's the first. They each take like a different, like each story arc takes like a different literary. Genre
okay.
and kind of plays with the convention. So the first one is like a noir, like a murder mystery.
How funny.
But it's my wife touched on the same thing. She said, you know, because she's not into comics, and
right.
I bought her volume one on Sue's recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're up to volume three. So that tells you if you come into Undercity, ask Sue. She'll point you in the right direction. But my wife said the same thing, that she just wasn't sure how the story was going to unfold
yeah.
as far as the visuals were concerned.
Right, right.
And then
right.
she mm-hmm. just said, well, you know, the visuals really. But I think in the best comics, they don't just serve the story. I think you can appreciate, like, you can go through,
mm-hmm.
You can go through Lock and Key and just look at the pictures, and they're amazing.
Right.
It's amazing
yeah.
art. Like, and then as you get farther mm-hmm. As you get farther into the story, I can tell you it gets better and better.
Yeah,
and better.
I mean, even the dialogue's rich, but, like, you're right, like, as far as, like, talking about the pictures, like, my boyfriend is... an artist. I call him an artist.
Sure.
Shout out, Thomas.
Yeah.
But
we're going to get to Thomas in a minute because I have something else that I wanted to...
But what's neat is, like, he was looking at it, and then he started reading it and, like, read it and in the night, he was just like obsessed. And then he spent so much time looking at the sketches and the drawings in the back and was just so like mesmerized by them because they are so beautiful. And like they really have so much, I don't know what you'd say, like a lot of aura around them. You know, like the house is spooky and it's terrifying looking and the colors are dark. It's just, it's really cool.
And it's a really cool color palette they use. It's kind of a muted, it's weird. I mean, you when you start to look at books like this, you do start to notice different artists and different, they all have a different style and they all use a different color palette. So I think that's what one of the things that drew me back was because I've mentioned this on the show before. They were so different than, I think when in the 80s when I was reading them, they're really what you think of like, as like an old comic book would look like, you know, very small panels and like, you know, every once in a while you get like a splash page that would go across, but you know, very small and the dialogue's very, now it's very, you know, like they'll take a whole page and like the drawings of Lovecraft sometimes take up a whole panel and they're just these beautiful, like, and there's so much detail and, you know.
And a lot of times they foreshadow like, okay, this next part of the book is going to be about, like, you know, you can get a feeling for what the next chapter is, so to speak, like by the splash page.
It's really cool. It's a great book. So you would recommend it? Now, do you think you'll be you think you would be I mean, I think you'd definitely now follow work of that same artist or the same writer.
Yeah, I mean, oh, both, but I'd like to see them as a team, because I don't know, like, after, I know after reading one, for sure, I'm going to follow through the series, like, I'm hooked. But, yeah, I don't know if, like, okay, hey, this Rodriguez did a new comic book I'm going to see. I think I'd probably follow more Joe Hill, just because I love the artwork, but I love the kind of horror bent.
So do you see yourself finding, because I think there's people that follow, like I do, they kind of have their foot in both camps where they'll read stuff like Lock and Key, but then I want to see what's going on with Wolverine and the Savage Land. I'm going to keep pushing that title no matter what. So do you feel like you, not? I don't see you going down the road of, well, I'm going to pick up Batgirl number 19 or whatever, but do you think you would start making it going the indie route and start finding like stuff that's interesting like Lock and Key? Because there's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah,
I think once you start digging around, you're going to start finding a lot of stuff like,
well, I know I'm going to check out Punk Rock Jesus on Sue's recommendation.
I'm fascinated by that book because as a person who was like raised in a Christian household, I know that the tendency there was for people to say like that would be blasphemous, but I think I like the idea of exploring that, like what would people do if someone was, I mean, and it kind of calls into question things. There's I am not relating Christ to a mammoth, but there's a copy of National Geographic sitting on my desk at home right now, and it's a picture of a mammoth coming out of a test tube, and it's saying, you know, we can clone these animals, but should we?
Right.
What are the moral implications of it?
Yeah.
And where do you stop? Do you have a Jurassic Park situation?
Right.
And what if you could clone a religious figure or, you know, a historical figure?
Right.
You know, what if you clone George Washington, or what have you cloned, you know?
And the appropriateness of that, and how that just changes the way we deal with
that's
life.
What I'm fascinated by that idea. Like when she told me about that, I was really like, from the background I have, I thought that was just that's just an amazing theological question to ask. So I'm kind of curious to pick it up. So when you're done reading, you'll have to come back with your review.
Yeah, I definitely will. Yeah, and for me, I think also the idea that like they were doing this for entertainment, right, for a reality show. Is interesting, and then the fanaticism on all the different camps that would be involved. That seems really exciting.
Because it wouldn't just be mm-hmm. you know, you would have religions who don't agree with Christianity. You know, it would just be
crazy.
It would just be a mess. And then, well, we're gonna clone somebody. That's a fascinating idea.
Yeah,
and I think that speaks to what we were talking about. That now I think you can find good writing in all mediums. You know, even video games.
There's
some great writing in like games like BioShock.
Well,
and Mass
this
Effect.
New BioShock. I got it for Thomas.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was kind of like duped because I had heard him talking about it before Christmas time, and so I was like, okay, perfect, I'll get him that for Christmas. And then I go in, they're like, oh, it comes out in March, you can pre-order. I go, damn it, because I want him to open something.
Yeah.
But I ended up doing that, and then the guy was like talking to me for like 20 minutes. Oh, do you know about this game? Is it for you? My boyfriend. He's like, and then it didn't matter what I said because he was telling me how it's so great. And then I started watching Thomas play it, and it's this incredible world, and I'm like, okay, who's that guy?
Yeah.
Who's that lady? You know? And
if you get a chance, go back and have Thomas play the first, or watch him play the first one. One of the most atmospheric and creepy.
It's so
there was
cool.
literally a moment in the game, I kid you not, there was a moment in that game that I still say is the scariest thing that's ever happened to me playing a video game, where I literally had to turn the game off and walk away because I was just like,
tell me.
It screwed with me. Okay. It's going to be hard to explain visually, so without the aid of visuals. There is BioShock, the first one, takes place in an underwater city that was mm-hmm. built in the 30s, so it's very Art Deco.
Yeah.
And so you end up, you're on a plane that's crossing the Atlantic that crashes, and you find this lighthouse. It's the same lighthouse as the beginning of, mm-hmm. It's out in the middle of the Atlantic somewhere, and you get to the beacon, and it's actually a bathysphere that takes you down to the city.
Bathysphere.
Yeah, that's exactly.
How great, yeah.
Yeah, so, and they have all this period music. So you hear, like, the ink spots, yeah. and they're, you know, it's like this weird.
Well, this new
period.
BioShock, it's like turn of the century,
yeah,
exactly. but up in the sky. And, yeah, it's the music and
did
these creepy sounds.
Did you catch them singing, like, at a barbershop quartet singing the Beach Boys? Did you catch that on there?
I didn't.
There's, if you're explaining the city, one by the, and they're singing a Beach Boy, they're singing God Only Knows. But like in a 19, like
yeah.
like a teens, like a pre-World War I.
Funny.
So the city's dilapidated, and in the BioShock games, part of the, and you see this in BioShock Infinite, part of the reason that things have gotten so screwed up is they've actually, in vending machines, you can buy things that will modify your gene code, so you can shoot fire
yeah.
out of your hands, or shoot bees like
yeah.
wasps, all this crazy stuff. So people start getting addicted to the stuff, and they just go crazy and turn on each other.
Right.
So by the time you get to this city, it's just been ravaged, and the only people left are these, they're basically junkies that have now all these
mutated
superpowers.
Themselves.
They're mutants.
Yeah.
They're basically mutants. So there's a scene where I'm at the one end of a hall, and there's a long hall down at the other end. And the hall is L-shaped, so it curves off so I can't see what's
yeah.
going on. But there's shadows going on, and I see someone who looks like a surgeon. He's got somebody strapped to a table.
Ew.
And the person is screaming, like, no, no, no. And you can see in the silhouette that he's cutting
That's
someone who's
awful.
Alive open. Well, there's nowhere to go. You have to go straight.
And
so
you have to
cross down.
Yeah.
The hallway kind of, there's stairs that lead down, uh-huh. and then they rise up on the other side. Well, you're standing in water, so you have to walk to the... So as soon as you get in the water, the power goes out.
Of course.
No power.
Right.
So you get to the other side, and you find this mutilated body on the table. There's no one around. The doctor's gone, but there's nowhere he could have gone. Like, you're
right.
looking... There's no... It's a dead end. There's nowhere
yeah.
to go. So, he got out. You just figure, okay, maybe it was like an hallucination, whatever. So you start... You know, you're basically... Your basic job in this game is to find... I've got to find ammo. I've got to find this.
Right.
I've got to find that. So I'm turning around, searching the drawers, everything. I'm searching the body to see
yeah.
if there's anything useful. I turn, you know, it's first person perspective. So I turn, and the doctor's just standing there with a scalpel in his hand and says, hello, just like out
yeah.
of nowhere because you're not expecting it. I literally, it was like the middle of the night, all the lights are off in our apartment. I literally like, duh! I do one of those where you're just like, and I just had it was like, you know what? I'm not going to do this. And I got up and turned the controller off.
How funny.
But the game is,
yeah.
is like that. It's so creepy and so.
Well, I remember with Resident Evil, and
that was another one.
Yeah, I didn't play as much, but I remember we had a childhood friend, John, and he would play it, and he would, like, and we loved, me and my sisters loved all watching him because he was an expert player, so he would actually advance through levels and stuff. But yeah, I remember once where he was in a hallway or something, and of course we have the lights off and just all the sound effects, and I think a bunch of like dogs or werewolves or something
yeah.
burst in through the hallway.
I remember that.
And
yeah.
it was so creepy. Yeah, it's like a movie though.
The creepiest
video games.
There was a in I think two, there was the guys that could crawl along the walls.
Mm-hmm. It's so eerie.
And so you your first shot of them is you're walking through a hall and it cuts like this medium shot so you can
yeah.
see your character, but you can see a window that's looking outside, and then somebody slithers across the window, and I was just like, my God, that was a creep. Until the moment in BioShock, that
right.
was the creepiest moment. But that just, it's so great that, like, so much care has gone into,
right.
like, so much care is going into things like this for, you know, because I think, to me, people who create video games, you're creating, it's an art form.
It's a world,
now.
Yeah.
It's an art
mm-hmm.
form now. Because you, like you said, you got immersed in a BioShock Infinite. It's
yeah.
like, you're sitting there as a spectator. You're not
I'm
even
not playing.
Playing.
Yeah.
And you're drawn. And that's such an awesome color palette, too. It's like that real watercolory
mm-hmm.
looking.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's
and
so
it's
much detail.
So,
yeah.
And it's the opposite of BioShock was dark. The original BioShock was dark and eerie and creepy. And there was a lot of greens. And
mm-hmm.
you were having everything filtered in
through the water.
And so it's a completely different, but it was very Art Deco. It was a completely different.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that the game could be so bright, like Bioshock, because you have those sun dappled. It's like really in a floating city.
Everything's kind of like whitewashed out almost. It looks old but new.
But it still can be scary, and it's amazing that they really did a good job of those.
Yeah.
I'm really glad we touched on video games because I'm going to have we have not tackled yet, but Jonathan Orozco is going to be my next guest, and he and I are big video game geeks, so he'll be my next guest. So look forward to that in a couple of weeks.
Stay tuned.
Now, Lauren, you sat down with us originally. We were going to do a horror show.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to call it the Big Floating Horror Show, in reference to my brother's zombie. But that's why we were talking, because you're a horror aficionado.
Enthusiast.
Okay. So let's talk about, I wanted to catch up. So the last time we talked, we were talking about different things like Doctor Who. Gotten farther along in the Doctor Who?
I haven't, which is so funny. Like, I had so much momentum going, and then I found out... a big kind of reveal in the story. Do I say? I mean, it's...
Spoiler alert. Go ahead.
That River Song is Amy Pond and Rory's daughter.
How did you find that out?
I watched it. I saw the episode. So I got to that point.
Okay.
And so, yeah, like, I had so much momentum, and I got there, and you would think after that I'd see what happened. And then the next episode, or it ended with, like, okay, well, now we have to figure out this big puzzle. And Thomas and I agree, we kind of like it when it's episodic. Like, okay, they're going to tackle the darkness or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Or the silence.
The silence.
And, like, and it's kind of, like, contained in that.
Uh-huh.
But, I was like, okay, well, the next one's going to be, like, a two-hour one. And
So
we kind of had paused, and then he started watching Mad Men, and then I started watching Mad Men.
Beautiful.
It's awesome.
I've never
seen that show.
Oh, my
gosh. I've heard so much about it.
How far are you now?
That's
an easy distraction. It's easy to get distracted.
I don't know what season, maybe three or four. They started their own company.
Sterling Draper Cooper Price.
Maybe it's too late to say spoiler alert because the show's been on for a while.
No, it's you've had six seasons to catch up.
Yeah, the Drapers have divorced.
Yeah,
you know?
Betty.
Yeah,
isn't it? You know what's funny about that show? We're gonna we'll digress for a second. Is that when Betty starts kind of gaining her independence from Don, like, you know, they divorce.
Right.
But when she starts doing the stuff Don does, why is it that when Betty does it, it's so annoying? You're just like, I hate her as a character. But Don is the most deplorable human being walking the face of the earth.
Oh, he's a rat.
And
you're
just like, I love this guy.
Well, because you know what? He seems like he has depth, and she seems like a brat.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like he's coming from a place of, like, oh, I'm just a mess, and, like, you know, kind of like a dark spot. She's coming from just very self centered, absorbed, and he looks like he doesn't know how to manage or handle emotions or problems or people.
Well, I think with him, I think it's self-preservation. I think that the whole reason he's like that is self-preservation. You touched on something really good. Yeah, you're right. That is an excellent observation because I never thought of that. She obviously comes from means.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
And she's always kind of had things her way, and so she's just another way for her to orchestrate what she wants. Where him, he's just, you know...
Because it's so funny, at the end of that pilot... spoiler alert! You've seen him go through everything, and he's got that girl that the beatnik girl, and they're like having this thing, and then at the very last shot of that is him coming home to this family. He opens the door, and there's his wife and kids, you know, and he's got this house on Long Island. You're like, oh my god, like it's such a turn,
right,
you know,
right.
And you initially feel a lot of sympathy for Betty, and you feel sympathy for the kids, and then but as it wears on, you realize, man. If I was married to Betty,
you'd want to get out of there. Yeah, she's a pain, and the kids are a pain.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're both terrible parents.
They're
the worst parents on earth. Those kids are going to be so screwed up.
But the kids are annoying, too, and I hate to say that. Like, I hate when people say, those are awful child actors. But I hate I don't know if I hate the characters or I hate the actors. I hate the kids.
The kids, especially...
I sound like Betty Draper.
Especially the daughter. She gets better as it goes along.
Really?
And she'll... you're in season four, so you're going to start seeing some of the storylines. But this season has been great. And it's funny because not a lot, those characters don't change a lot.
Yeah.
The times change and those characters don't, is one of the things you notice. But you still, I love.
And maybe that's more realistic that people don't change.
My wife and I, that's one of our favorites. Like Sunday nights right now are fantastic. Cause I catch up on Doctor Who from the night before, and then it's Game of Thrones and then Mad Men, and it's like, like 3 hours of like, wow, this is really
fabulous.
I'm satisfied. I don't need to watch anything else. Like, this is perfect.
Right.
So Yeah, I'm really glad you got into Mad Men because I want to do a show where we talk about.
Oh, cool. I would like
so to get caught up. It's awesome.
Okay, cool.
But so you were saying now you got sidetracked now.
So I got sidetracked from Doctor Who. It's still there. Like I'm still excited about it. Yeah. But I just started watching Mad Men, and it's hard for me to multitask shows.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's kind of.
You know, I was that way. I'm not that way with shows, but I get that way with books. Like I can only read one book.
I can only read one book at a time.
But if it's a novel or something, my daughter, she'll have like three or four books going at the same time. I can't do it either.
I can't do that. I feel like I'll, and I must have. Yeah, I have read multiple books at a time, but I hate doing that because I feel like I'll muddle the characters or their character traits, you know?
I feel like reading a book, because you can do, like, I can read like five or six comics at a time, it's not a big deal, but I think reading a book, it's such an emotional investment.
It is.
And with a comic, you remember this is a continuing series, so you know
the
traits of whoever you're reading with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with a novel, I'm rereading Ender's Game, which I had read a long time ago, and it's, they're going to do a movie, Harrison Ford is going to be in the movie.
Oh, great.
It's basically, it's in the line of, like, not the movie, but the novel, like Starship Troopers, where it's basically Earth fought a battle against these, an alien force, and won just by the skin of it, but they had one commander who just was able to, they were outnumbered, and he was able to fight them off, and it's been like, I don't know, like 80 or something years, but ever since then, the world's been prepping for another invasion.
Sure.
And so what they do is they use children, because the children don't think like adults do. They have
more imagination.
Yeah, and so they kind of have a program where they get like the best kids. They basically take them away from their families and they just train them to be officers, warriors.
Uh-huh.
And the ones who don't make it end up being like the grunts.
Right.
But they train them from like, I think Ender's like a 6-year-old. But he's very advanced. So you're getting this whole thing through his eyes how he has to move through the ranks. And it's a really, really interesting book. And I hadn't read it in a long time. But I found myself now, like even though I've read it before, I have another book I want to start.
Which
but I'm
one?
Like, no, I got to wait. It's a book on, no, it's boring. I like how you get like which one? It's just a dumb. It's a book about fantasy football, but it's just like a little analysis of it's how to the totally busted me. I don't want to give away my strategies, but I have a book I want to check out. Somebody recommended me this awesome book. They had a lot of success in their draft. Last year was one of my worst. I think it was the team. I think it was. We're gonna. Like,
don't you?
You gotta have a good team name.
Assemble the team.
Yeah, you have. That's you know. Like,
I think it was the team.
I do assemble the team. Then. Avengers assemble, but it's no. It was the team name is what I meant to say. You have to have a good team name.
What was your team name?
Last year it was what the hell was it? I can't remember what it was.
My best
team ever. The best I ever did when I took second place in the league was. There was a kicker by the name of, his last name was Grammatica.
Uh-huh.
So see if you can guess what I named the team.
Battlestar Grammatica?
Yes! We high five on this show. Battlestar Grammatica. That's
Mario
right.
just slapped me. That's what that
is. Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, Lorna, another reason I love having you is because I feel like you always bring a topic list, which I do appreciate. But I feel like our conversation flows.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like, and you always have a lot to contribute on any number of topics.
Mm-hmm.
So I do, and I feel a certain level of, like, I feel comfortable with you. And you know what's amazing? You got such great feedback on your episode, and I think I sent you a text, and my wife said this.
Yeah,
she was
so
like
nice.
She was in the driveway saying, "I don't want to turn the podcast off. She's such a good guest." And so many people that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Have texted me going, God, like, Lauren was awesome. She was such a cool guest.
How
like,
wonderful.
Like, she's such a smart cookie. You know, it's like, because, you know, when you work with people, they only know, like, one side of you. They only know, like, you know. Okay.
Yeah.
But
my fake side.
Yeah, of course. You know, but there's so much depth to other people. And, I feel like you and Nina, like, we were talking about before we started recording, that you, my poor friend, I was talking about my friend Robert and how I foisted it on him, and like, it was late at night, I was like, let's record, just to get something in the can, and so we did it, and I feel like you and Nina really helped me get things going in a, like on a legitimate path, like, what is this going to be like?
That's nice.
Like, it can be interviewee, but we can also, like, stop
and
kind of have these asides that are really fantastic. So I appreciate you because I appreciate you. You coming back.
Oh yeah, my pleasure. It's so fun.
Because you immediately was like, you were like, well, I'd love to do it again.
Oh,
and I was like,
yeah,
I'm gonna call you
on
it. I'm gonna call you, and you came back for our Doctor Who panel, which is awesome. And so I said, all right. And you had May. You're like, I'll be free after the 8th of May.
Yeah.
And I literally had it circled. I was like, Lauren will be free after this day. Just because I have you're easygoing and you're married,
yeah.
But you also have an intellectual. The depth that is across from me, ladies and gentlemen, cannot be measured.
It's like the abyss.
Could not. Right? James Cameron in a bathysphere could not measure the depth of intellect that I have across from me. Have you gone on to listen to any other podcasts, or am I still
you're still my only one? Actually, though, I did realize that something I was listening to. I don't know if it's a podcast, but it's similar.
Uh-huh.
Snap Judgment. Have you ever listened to that before, or like La Moth Radio Hour?
Is this going to be your quick recommendation?
Awesome. That'll be part of my recommendation.
No, keep going.
Okay,
what is it?
Snap Judgment is awesome. It's called Storytelling with the Beat is their tagline, and so they have people come on and sharing personal stories based on whatever the week's theme is.
Yeah.
And so they'll do paranoia, and people will call in who were maybe had somebody in their family who had paranoid schizophrenia, or somebody who was actually being followed by like the mob. And so they're either like kind of mundane things, or they're like these really dramatic people. And the storytelling, some of it is awful because they're just amateurs, people sharing. But some of it is phenomenal. And they do, and I'll plug it as like kind of sneak peek to my recommendation, Snap Judgment. Their spooked episodes are awesome. They're every Halloween, and they're good, scary stories. And
that's
you can
awesome.
Download them. And it's like a 45-minute show, but it's pretty cool.
And it's a podcast. If you can download it, it's definitely
okay,
a podcast.
Then it's
so.
A podcast. I mean, I listen to that, but I mean, you're my only...
I always listen to This American Life. Is a great.
I hate that voice.
You
I can't
like
get
Ira Glass.
Past Ira Glass's voice.
Well, you know he's only in it for like the first.
I know.
5 minutes.
But sometimes, like, I mean, I've only listened to maybe 2 or 3 episodes.
Yeah, skip ahead, just get to the stories because they're fantastic. I will give you the ones to listen to. But there's one called "And the Calls Were Coming from Inside." And the calls were coming.
Great.
And the calls were coming from the basement. It's the one they did at Halloween, and the very first story is like this. Traditional. It was a letter written to a doctor, and it was about a haunted house like in New England somewhere.
I love it.
And
already.
It's really, really awesome. And it gives you the most. It kind of sucks because it gives you the most mundane explanation for hauntings.
Yeah.
But the way the story is read and the music that is such a great the way that show, even if you don't like his voice.
Mm-hmm.
The way that show is produced,
I would agree. Like,
it's like a model for like great radio.
Yeah, I've listened to him, and I guess maybe the topics I chose, I thought, okay, this kind of is the epitome of like public radio, like eccentric, kind of more intellectual, where it's not as appealing. Maybe like on a Sunday afternoon, where it was like talking about like sexuality of like chimps or something like that, and I was like, oh, I can't.
You gotta listen to like the silly stuff. Like,
yeah,
just their silly.
Like that. That sounds great.
There's one called Kid Logic that's amazing, and it's all these stories of like where kids make. They'll have the same logic that you and I do,
sure.
And they'll just make a conclusion that's completely erroneous. And so, a little girl gets on a plane, like this old woman's on a plane,
and a
little girl's sitting next to her, and the little girl says, "When do we shrink?" And she's like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
And she's like, "Well, I watched planes take off. When do we get smaller?" Like, you know, but the girl saw the same information that you and I, but she doesn't understand. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Going farther away, so it's going to appear smaller. The more
that's
she just
awesome.
Thought, well, you shrink when you get on a plane.
Yeah,
it's all little stories like that that are really, really great. So that's a really good one, kiddo.
Oh, cool.
And Ira Glass does kind of have
that
really
voice.
Soft,
really nasally,
high pitched,
kind of like erudite, condescending a little bit. Sometimes,
it's
not like a warm radio host that's charming.
The
like
reason people hate liberals. Like,
basically. Yeah, you know, you hear it and it's just like,
the reason people hate liberals. Like, that kind of voice. But he, you know, as you get to know him better.
Right.
They did one on television and he told a story about how he and his wife would watch, of all shows, what was the show that had the Phantom Planet did the...
The OC.
Yeah.
California
him and his wife. Yeah. Him and his wife did the. Him and his wife would watch that religiously.
How bizarre!
Right. And so when it got canceled, like he talked about how, like how that, like it was like a whole, like him and his wife were just like, they cried on the couch, like in the last episode. It was a really, really, it was a really charming episode. It kind of made me, him seem like, okay, this is a real person.
Right, right,
and
right.
And he's not just like, it's not just like some
he doesn't
kind of,
just go to coffee shops yeah. and read 18th century Paris novels. Yeah. God. Right?
he's so judgmental. But yeah, it's true.
I had his whole picture already formed.
Have you ever seen a picture of him?
No.
He's got the...
a young Woody Allen.
No, he's got a very, like... He wears those really big, nerdy glasses, like the round, almost feminine kind of... Mm-hmm. I'm pulling up a picture of Ira Glass. Please keep talking, because I can't multitask. But his name is Ira. How do you not love a guy whose name is Ira?
I don't know.
But, yeah, that's a recommendation, I'll say. If you like any good radio, listen to This American Life. It's stories. I mean, obviously we're not talking about music, but I think you have a recommendation in your thing for music. But let's get to, we're at about 35 minutes, so let's do this real quick.
Uh-huh.
Let's take a quick break.
Cool.
And so for those of you at home, you're going to join us again next week. For those of you here in the store, you're going to join us back in a couple minutes. So we'll be back with Lauren Nichols. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.